And welcome back to the BSD YouTube show. As always, your host, Patrick Kerbler. And I'm joined, as always, by Tim Aiden and Jarrett Sanina. Fellas, I have not talked to you since before the Ohio State game. I saw you guys did your Ohio State recap. Did great numbers. Turns out that Penn State losing is good for our business. But now we're right back at it. We faced number one last week. Now we return home to Beaver Stadium for the first time. Without James Franklin, and we face the number two team in the country, the Indiana Hoosiers. So today on the show, we'll be talking Indiana. We'll talk some coaching search stuff as well, talk about Brent Key and Clark Lee. Their names have been popping up, and then take a look at the college football landscape as a whole. But before we go on to Indiana, guys, I just want to kind of put a bow on Ohio State. What a bad game. Like, just truly, 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 what a bad game. What are just our main quick takeaways from the Ohio State affair?
The secondary, pretty much no hope to stop their receivers. I mean, they couldn't even keep them in front of them. You know, the double, triple teaming Jeremiah Smith and Tate, and they're still easily slipping behind them. Same old story with the offense. They actually had the best drive of the season, I would say, in the first half. They scored a touchdown, did a nice job capitalizing that turnover, but then after that, didn't really accomplish much the rest of the game. So just the case of Ohio State being the much better team, and the results easily showed that.
Yeah, I mean, not much else to add to what Jared said, but it's good to see at least the run game looked better, at least in the first half. And but of course, Andy Kolnicki, being his usual self, decides to go away from it in the second half. And it's been the story of the season. And somehow Catron Allen only gets, what, three carries in the second half? But, nothing makes sense to me anymore.
Yeah, I read some that uneven formation they're doing the run game. I think they had three running attempts out of the formation at like 50 some yards, including a 1 yard touchdown by Singleton where there was no one even close to him. And then I guess they didn't run that again after that.
Because why keep going with what's working?
Yeah, well, exactly.
I have to say, being at the game, and it was, it's just weird going into an Ohio State game. I was there in 2019. There in 2023. 2019, it certainly, I didn't go into the game necessarily thinking that Penn State was going to win, but it was a good Penn State team. It wasn't out of the realm possibility that they would win. And same thing with 2023, right? Like, I thought Penn State was going to win. So we're going into this one of not expecting them to win at all and just having no expectations. And at no point did I think that Penn State was going to, pull away with it or to even, honestly, really even keep it close. I might have alt bet the line to -27.5. So I was a little annoyed that Ryan Day decided to take the foot off the pedal at the end, because at that point I was like, okay, well, at least let me cover my bet. But they did not.
I'll share one quick anecdote from Saturday that we actually didn't bring up on the post game show. We both meant to, but Tim messaged me at some point in the second half and said, hey, you still good to jump on after the game? I said, yeah, sure. We decided we'd meet up at 3:40. Then Tim says, okay, I'm going to go take a nap, and then I'm going to set my alarm in a little bit. So that pretty much sums up this season and just where things are with Penn State, is that, you can just go ahead and take a nap second half of the Penn State-Ohio State game and not have to worry about missing anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, you would only miss the bad things. Not that – again, the first half was fine. I mean, for Penn State to go into it only down 17-14, credit to them in some sort of way. And I think this is like a good thing for us to transition into our Indiana preview. I know tonight, now it's, you're watching this live, it's Wednesday. If you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple, we're recording this Wednesday night. So media just was at the practice facility for normal media availability. Mm-hmm. And Tyler Donahue, Lions 24/7, tweeted out that it was kind of the consensus amongst all the beat reporters that this was the lowest energy practice that they can recall seeing in quite some time. Which, I don't know. Does that mean anything? Does it not? Because I know in weeks past, like, I think Terry Smith said, with like the tracking data that they wear and how it measures their heart rate and stuff like that, like, how they have had like really high intensity practices, and that didn't mean anything. Clearly, Penn State still hasn't won a game since mid-September at this point. But What are we expecting out of this Penn State team? Because once again, I don't look at them against Iowa or look at them against Northwestern or Ohio State and think like there's like a true like no effort at all. But it does clearly feel like a team that is going through the motions of sort or is only going 75%. So do we expect to see like the floor fall out against Indiana? What do we think the energy is going to be like?
You know, I for some reason I had this like weird gut feeling this would be the week that, you know, things just come together. They put in this great effort, and I'm not saying they would upset them, but you know, they'd put themselves in a position though to possibly pull off something that nobody would have, you know, considered Penn State being able to do at this point in the season. But yeah, after hearing that, that's definitely not what you want to hear. It does kind of feel like this team is you know, possibly defeated, and like you said, maybe it is working at the point where the bomb's going to fall out. The one thing we know about Cignetti in Indiana is they are not shy about, you know, Ohio State's all about load management and reducing possessions and reducing snaps for their defense, and they're kind of playing the long game. Indiana's not really like that. They're just going to try to go out there and just overwhelm defenses and try to put up as many points as they can. So yeah, we're in a situation where things could get ugly in a hurry Saturday. Then you kind of got to wonder what the psyche of the team is, because after that, there's three winnable games. But is this team going to be just, you know, running on fumes and going through the motion and just kind of, you know, just be ready to wrap up the season at that point?
I do want to bring up this comment from Kevin Chandler. How can you blame the secondary when no pass rush and blitz at all and Knowles being stubborn man-to-man against the best damn receivers in America? To be fair, Kevin, that's, you know, a valid point. I think that, you know, we kind of knew that the defense overall was stinky, and specifically, you know, the defensive line and their ability to get pressure. I think that maybe there was like still a part of the Penn State fan that, you know, wanted to believe in, you know, what was probably the strength of this team. I think, I mean, I guess it's secondary, but yeah, I mean, there's you don't only win three games and be winless in Big Ten play going into, you know, at this point, the second week in November without having major holes everywhere. So I think it was just the, you know, we haven't seen Penn State really gashed in the air like that in you know, quite some time. So, but Tim, thoughts on, you know, kind of just the vibes going into, even not even the vibes for the team, just the vibes for ourselves. Because I love, you know, writing about Penn State football. I love, you know, doing this podcast and talking about it, and love the coaching search and stuff like that. But it certainly feels like Groundhog Day coming on here and having to talk about some of this stuff.
Well, one way I've been remedying that, Pat, is I took over as Penn State's offensive coordinator in EA Sports College Football 26 and helped play call to a 16-0 national championship season, just clinched a championship today, as I sent you guys a screenshot in the Slack channel. So
yes, that's why we were 10 minutes late to start the show.
Yeah, sorry guys, I was busy winning a natty on Earth 2, so back here on Earth 1 doing the in reality with you guys. But no, it's one way. You know, I just wanted to add on actually to what we're just counterpoint sort of what Jared said about the reports about this being the most low energy practice the beat writers have seen. I remember in years past when, you know, you hear James Franklin say, we had the most spirited, energetic practice I've seen. And then they go out and just crap the bed, you know, against some, you know, bad opponent that week. So I don't know if I put too much stock in that as to how it's going to determine how I pick the game. But yeah, but to go back to your thing though, Pat, just, yeah, you know, winning a virtual national championship. And, you know, again, I just tell myself, you know, this is temporary. We're in November. Hopefully by Thanksgiving week, things are going to be heating up big time about who the likely hire is going to be. And then hopefully the day after the Rutgers game, you know, you get some Pete Thamel tweet coming out saying source Penn State to hire, you know, so-and-so to be the next head coach.
Yeah, no, and that's, I mean, kind of the thing that when they fired Franklin and it was like, okay, we're going to get this long coaching search, but it was like, I don't know, I guess easy to overgloss the fact that it's like, oh, we do have these games to play. And it just really would have been nice to get that Iowa win, like, now in retrospect. And I know I was a big proponent of, like, coming on after the game and being like, eh, it doesn't matter, like, who cares? And again, in the grand scheme of things, it I don't think it greatly matters, but just for, like, my own psyche, like, it and the team psyche, just to have that win against Iowa, who knows? I mean, I still think they lose in pretty big fashion last week, but you would just think that the team from a morale standpoint might be in a better spot, because going against the number one, number two team in back-to-back weeks is not a recipe for success for almost any program, let alone one that, you know, hasn't won a game in the Big Ten and fired their coach and, you know, everything that goes along with that. I know last week one of the things we talked about was just, I guess, like, expectations going into this game. What are we expecting out of this game? Big noon kickoff, so it's not even like this, you know, a 3:30 kick or a primetime kick or you know, right, something that maybe could get the juices going, maybe get the crowd involved. Instead, we have a noon kick. What are we expecting? Because the line is at 14.5. I think that's a pretty interesting line because it feels like it goes greatly one way or greatly the other. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but like, I have a tough time seeing Indiana winning like by 17.
Yeah. It's weird because it's so weird how the schedule shook out with Indiana being, you know, the real deal this year, because yeah. If you look at their offense, they are eerily similar to Ohio State. So, you know, they got a Heisman finalist, a quarterback who's extremely efficient. They got a great vertical passing game, which Penn State struggled against last week. They've got two receivers are going to be second team all Big Ten behind Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith, who will obviously be first team, I'm assuming. They got several different running backs that they rotate, so they're always coming at you with a fresh running back. So very similar. And then defense, that's really how Indiana kind of went from a nice story last year to being a what looks like a national title contender this year, is because they just made such a huge improvement on defense. So they've got a really nice pass rush. They're really good at just figuring out protections and just kind of getting to the finding the gaps in the offensive line. They've done a wonderful job of that all season. That's led to a lot of turnovers as well. So yeah, they're just really good on both sides of the ball. They don't have a lot of weaknesses to exploit. So I'm not expecting a very good outcome. I don't know if we're going to do score predictions now or later, but
you can just toss in the score prediction.
So this is before I read about the lack of enthusiasm at practice. Whether or not you even want to consider that. But what I have is 45-17. So I think Penn State may get a few decent drives going. Grunkemeyer showed, you know, some flashes last week. But I think overall Indiana's going to be able to jump out to a lead and maintain it. And I don't think they're not going to take their foot off the gas until late in the game, probably. So 45-17, I wouldn't be shocked if it's a bit worse than that.
Yeah. I have a similar prediction as Jared. I have 41-17 Indiana, but I do think, I don't know, Indiana seems to, not too often, but it seems every now and then they start off a little slow on the road. Yep. I mean, last week at Maryland, their opening drive, they threw an interception, which Maryland converted into a field goal. So, yeah, who knows? It kind of depends. I don't know what kind of crowd we're going to get, or, you know, this being Terry Smith's head coaching debut at Beaver Stadium, you know, I wonder how much fan base cares to come out and support him and support these guys who toughed it out. Yeah, but I think maybe Indiana gets off to a bit of a slow start and Penn State puts together a couple of nice drives. And, you know, maybe it's like, you know, I think it's a tight game at halftime. You know, maybe it's even tied or Penn State is a slight lead. Who knows? But I think Indiana in the second half, though, is just going to get their act together and pour it on. And especially, you know, if their defense is able to force a bunch of three and outs or get some turnovers, it could get ugly in the second half. And so I think they kind of pull away then.
Yeah. I think it also should be, you know, stated that Kirk Cignetti is a PA guy. He's from Pittsburgh. His dad is IUP head coach. He went to West Virginia himself. My understanding, and maybe I'm wrong, is that Kurt is not a, you know, was never a big Penn State fan to begin with. From my understanding, I don't think Joe and the elder Cignetti had a great relationship. So not that that, you know, necessarily would change things. Not like if Cignetti grew up a Penn State fan, he would try any less to really lay it on. But I think that, you know, Cignetti has shown and Indiana has shown that they're going to, you know, put the pedal to the metal when they can. So
now, apparently he and Terry Smith are good friends from what I understand from Terry's pressers. So he may let his foot off the gas just a tad. That's a good point. If it's like, if Indiana is ahead comfortably in the fourth quarter.
No, that's a good point. And yeah, Terry, gateway guy, I'm sure sent a lot of kids to, you know, IUP, whether it's to play for the eldest Cignetti or to play for Kurt himself. But I just think that, you know, not a homecoming of sorts, but still, you know, playing in his coaching in his home state. I think this will be one that Cignetti, you know, really wants to get. And I feel like that Indiana probably, you know, puts it on at the end. So yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with you guys. I'll say, Jerry, you said 45-17. Mm-hmm. I'll join you. I like 45-17. That sounds about right. It's just, again, it's just hard to look at this Penn State team and, right, it's not as good as we thought it was going to be. Andy Kolnicki has seemingly just decided this is it. He's not going to really change anything at all. I mean, I don't know how many times Terry Smith has to say after games and before games, like, we want to pass it vertically. We want to, you know, we want to stretch it vertically. And it just doesn't happen.
I don't know why he just didn't fire Kolnicki like a week or two ago if he's not listening to. You know, Terry's the boss now, so
yeah.
You know, maybe just have Ty Howell call plays for the last few games like he did a couple years ago when Mike Yurcich got fired.
No, exactly. I just, I guess I, right, none of this like actually matters, but it is just weird that he's just not doing a very good job. And I know that he's hamstrung with receivers and hamstrung with Nick Singleton not looking like he's been, and the offensive line not being as good as he's been, and being on a backup quarterback, right? If Drew Aller was out there, maybe things look slightly different. But it's, you know, it's not like all these signs weren't there in out of conference play, and Penn State has just, you know, offensively certainly has not been able to flip the switch, and it's a painful watch, man. It's a painful watch. So yeah, I will go with a big Indiana blowout as well. Curious to see what happens after this, because, you know, like we're saying, like Terry Smith saying, you know, we want to attack the field vertically. If that doesn't happen again, Tim, like you're saying, could we see Ty Howell get put into, you know, an offense coordinator role, or at the very least just, you know, calling the plays? I don't think that they would demote Andy as much as they would just, you know, relieve him of his duties. So we'll see. And could be also a place of Terry trying not to, you know, if you're going to put Ty in that spot, he's probably someone that you want to, you know, put in a spot where he can succeed. And maybe that's a little bit easier against the likes of Michigan State than it is Indiana. So we'll see. But this is where we're at with the Penn State season that we're discussing.
I actually Googled worst loss in Beaver Stadium history before we got started, just because I was wanting to enter that territory. So actually, do either of you know the answer to that?
I mean, worse is subjective, but I assume you mean like largest deficit, like 6-4.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Most lopsided loss in Beaver Stadium history.
Was it like within?
It won't be a game you remember watching, I can guarantee.
Okay, was it before any of us were born, Jared?
Yes.
Like, are we talking like 19, before the 1980s?
Yes, well before that.
All right, I have no idea. We're talking strictly Beaver Stadium, not like the old Beaver Field or.
Yeah, I don't think it was technically Beaver Stadium at that point.
Okay, so we're really going back.
Do you have some, a guess?
Baser's like the program. It's almost program history. So they lost to, I believe it's pronounced Lehigh. Lehigh.
Oh, Lehigh, yeah.
Lehigh. They lost to Lehigh 106-0 in 1889. So I don't think it'll be quite that bad.
I feel like I did know that. Now that you say that, Also, very clear that Jared is not a PA resident, if he doesn't know how to pronounce Lehigh. No offense, Jared. But that's...
I was going to mention, I'm not from Pennsylvania, so that's why. Give me some grace for not knowing how to the correct pronunciation.
No, that's okay. You can probably spell Cincinnati. I still have no idea. Every time I write Cincinnati out, I get it wrong every single time. But that's probably... It's probably wrong in Ohio.
Pat, I add the extra T at the end instead of the opposite end. Yeah. So that's fine. Mess it up.
All right, before we move on to coaching search stuff, just a reminder to subscribe to the BSC YouTube channel. We are here all season, no matter what. Doesn't matter how bad it gets for Penn State, we will be here. I think last I checked, we were at 388 subscribers. Let's get up to 400. Come on, let's get to 400 for the Indiana game. Let's even say 409. 409 feels like a really nice number to get to, you know, for Joe. We are because he was. So... thank you to everyone who's already subscribed, and make sure you guys are liking the video. Helps us out a ton, as we are the only Penn State podcast, the only Penn State YouTube show on the internet. All right, coaching search. We'll talk about Brent Key and Clark Lee here in a second, but do we have any overarching thoughts on the search or anyone else that we talked about in the past? I mean, last time we talked, it was rumored that Matt Rhule was going to be getting an extension, or looked like he was signing an extension. He then signed that extension and promptly lost against a ranked USC team, as he does. I think that basically, yeah, in both cases, right, signing the extension probably takes him out. I don't think he would sign it if he was a realistic option for Penn State. I also think that losing to USC and now losing Dylan Raiola as well, which could, you know, impact how Nebraska finishes the season. But any other thoughts on any of the other candidates that are out there? I mean, no one else has, other than Cignetti and Rhule, has really signed extensions as far as Penn State goes.
No, I kind of think Penn State's right now is just kind of going for the big fish right now. And if you know, they don't get any takers or any solid leads there, then they're going to, you know, start looking elsewhere. But that's my assumption right now, is they're, you know, holding out hope for an Elko or a DeBoer or someone of that nature, which I'm assuming they're probably going to have to eventually settle and go a rung down, because I think both those coaches will be at A&M and Alabama respectively next year. I don't think either one of them are going anywhere.
Tim?
Yeah, I just it's more just I've just been can't help myself, and I just keep looking at the coaching hot board thread on Lions 24/7 just to see what certain so-called insiders are saying, and then just seeing how people are interpreting those tea leaves. Some people take it one way, some people take it another. But I was getting really annoyed, not in the coaching thread, but actually in the live game thread for the basketball season opener the other night, because I don't know, there was someone who was like just crapping on Pat Kraft, saying like, "No, look what's happening with Mike Rhodes. You know, you trust this guy to do the football search." I'm thinking, bro, apples and oranges here.
Yeah. I wasn't the biggest fan of the Mike Rhodes hire, just because I wanted someone that was like offensively minded, and I just felt like his style, you kind of need the athletes. I didn't know Penn State could get, but one, I think Penn State basketball being able to pull VCU's coach like that 8 years ago wouldn't have been a thing. And secondly, like you're saying, Tim, it's Penn State basketball compared to Penn State football is two separate things. I do, you know, I've heard, you know, everything just about Mike Elko, Kalen DeBoer, Marcus Freeman. You know, I was listening to John Sauber and Audrey Snyder's podcast earlier today. I know John, who's, you know, super well connected, continues to say that's where the focus is, and not doubting that that is like the intel that John's getting. I do think that it's important to look at the bigger picture of this. And from all accounts, or from most accounts, it seems like this is really just Pat Kraft's search, right? There's no, they didn't hire an outside firm. I'm sure there's some people helping out, but all in all, this is really just Pat Kraft. That can be interpreted two ways as far as like information getting out, right? If you have a bigger search firm, if you have multiple people involved, that's more chances for info to get leaked. If you have just one person, then if there's not much info being leaked, but the info that is getting leaked is maybe something that you would be more trustworthy of. I just don't understand. I understand the idea of like waiting it out. Like Penn State's not going to hire Eli Drinkwitz, you know, on Sunday. Penn State's not going to hire Jeff Brohm or Clark Lee or Brent Key or Brian Harlan or any of these guys any sooner than November 30th. So there really is no rush, right? There's no reason to look at an Elko or look at a Kellen DeBoer and say that, you know, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to focus our time on Eli Drinkwitz or whoever it might be. But I don't know, man. It's just if any other fan base, right? If Auburn or Florida right now were saying that their focus is on Mike Elko and Kellen DeBoer, I would find that like humorous. And I know that that's like a bit apples to oranges too, especially when it comes to Elko, you know, being a Northeast guy, Kellen DeBoer quite not fitting in the SEC. And the idea of coming to Penn State, coming to the Big Ten, where, you know, the schedule is a little bit easier, the path to the playoffs is a little bit easier. But I don't know. I don't believe that Mike Elko or Kellen DeBoer and these guys are actually, like, realistic in any sense. Like, okay, it's fine that that's what Pat Kraft wants to focus on right now, that that's right, he's going to, you know, go after them and go after them and go after them until it's abundantly clear that they're not coming. But I think that they're also, Petcraft is a smart guy. And I think he also has to realize that, like, timing wise, it just isn't probably going to work out with Mike Elko. And more likely than not, it's not going to work out with Kellen DeBoer either, with either of these guys making the playoffs. Maybe Petcraft is, you know, a little bit stronger willed than I am when it comes to waiting at the playoffs and seeing what happens. But it just kind of seems like, I don't know, like, in a weird way, it almost seems like James Franklin's, like, recruiting struggles in this past class, where it's, you know, putting so much time and effort into Joey O'Brien and putting so much time and effort into Luke Waifel to then get them on official visits and to be like, whoa, 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 these guys are asking for way too much money. We can't afford that. It's like, well, maybe you should have asked them what NIL, what they want NIL-wise before we got to this 11th hour and just wasted all your time. So, Jared, I think you wanted to say something.
I was just going to say, I mean, A&M, for a program that hasn't historically been a national title contender year in and year out, they have very, very deep pockets. Elko, you know, like, even if he's tempted, like, they will easily, you know, match or outbid Penn State if that's what Penn State has to offer, outside of, you know, kind of bringing him back to his home region. I just think if either one of them are even a possibility, there has to be some serious issues behind the scenes that we don't know about, that they're just desperate to get out of there and you know, move on to the next stop. And I just don't find that that's going to be the case either one.
Yeah, it just seems a little bit too good to be true that someone would leave Alabama, someone that would leave Texas A&M on their own accord to come to Penn State, right? And the same in the inverse, like the idea of like a sitting Penn State coach to leave to go to Texas A&M. Alabama is a little bit different because Nick Saban has, you know, built that place up so much that when DeBoer was walking in there, I mean, it was a championship made roster like right away with no, you know, effort at all. But I've tweeted this out. There's like 18 jobs that I think like truly like the realistic expectation can be a national title there. Texas A&M is one of them. Alabama is one of them. You know, Penn State's one of them. Very rarely do you see guys jump from one job to another. Lane Kiffin notably did it. Jimbo Fisher notably did it.
Brian Kelly.
Yeah, Brian Kelly notably did it. But generally speaking, one, doesn't happen often. And secondly, doesn't usually work out. Like, it really doesn't usually work out. Like, there's a reason why they're leaving the school that they're leaving. In Jimbo Fisher's case, it was the game passing him by. In Brian Kelly's case, it was that was just, you know, everyone thought it was a Notre Dame ceiling when it was really just a Brian Kelly ceiling. And, you know, Lane Kiffin, obviously, that was a long time ago and a bit different circumstance. But not to say that I wouldn't want Kellen DeBoer or Mike Elko, but Kellen DeBoer is going to be Alabama's head coach. Mike Elko is going to be Texas A&M's head coach. Unless something completely crazy, crazy happens, that's going to be the reality of the situation. So, well, I understand the reports of all this. If you said Kellen DeBoer and Mike Elko, and I mean, we want to talk, put Marcus Freeman in that too, or the field, like it's very much the field. So anyway, the other thing I want to say just before we get into all this is just like a reminder of like how wide open this is. You know, I just said like, if you took Mike Elko, Kellen DeBoer and whoever, or if you took Mike Elko, Kellen DeBoer, and Marcus Freeman, or you gave someone the field, I think the smart move with the field. I think that if anyone gave me three coaches, doesn't matter what three coaches, or you gave me the field, I think I would take the field. Like this, I know like some of the jokes are that like Pat Kraft is casting a wide net, but that certainly seems to be the case. I don't know if there's anyone then, you know, the guys that have signed extensions that you can completely say no to. I don't know if there's anyone, I don't know. The farther that we get into this coaching search, the more, I don't want to say confusing it gets, but almost the lack, like a continual lack of clarity, which again, I guess makes sense because we're still multiple weeks away from Penn State hiring anyone. But two names that did pop up in recent days are Clark Lee and Brent Key. Clark Lee was mentioned by, I believe it was Chris Lowe of, I think he's with On3 now. I know he was with ESPN for a while, but he said, look for, you know, Vanderbilt's going to do their best to try to keep him, but look for Penn State to make a serious run. So do we see Penn State go back to Vanderbilt? What are our thoughts on Clark Lee?
Honestly, I think Clark Lee is still going to be the coach of Vanderbilt next season. I mean, they have made no secret just the investment that they've made in building up that program. You know, he's a Vanderbilt alumnus, played for the team. I honestly, unless there's a huge discrepancy in the contracts of what Vandy can offer him and what Penn State would offer him, which could be the case, but I just don't see him leaving, honestly. I think he's in Vanderbilt for the long haul, or at least to see if he can, you know, I think he's going to give us another 2-3 seasons to see if he can turn them into a true SEC contender.
His salary is $3.7 million.
Okay, that's a little lower than I was expecting. So, okay, so that does maybe, you know, that may make him a little bit more pliable than what I was thinking, but I don't know. I still have the feeling he's in for the long haul, but you know, when you're getting $3.7 million a year, which is, you know, obviously a very nice salary for most people, but if you compare that to $10, $11 million a year, then you know that's a pretty big life decision.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, you know, I have kudos to what Van has accomplished this year and even last year under Lee, when you know, but it's kind of more a product of him bringing on Jerry Kill, who then was able to convince Diego Pavia to transfer from New Mexico State to Vanderbilt. And I don't know, I just have a heart. Things weren't going so well for him pre-Pavia, and I'm just not so sure, you know, what he does post-Pavia. I don't know, it just, he feels like a guy
who wasn't on the seat before. The seat was getting warm before Pavia came to town.
Right, yeah, he was kind of on the hot seat going into last year before they had put together a winning season. But I just, he feels like a guy, like, that's only someone I would be okay with getting if Kraft struck out on his first, like, five or six choices. He's fairly low on my list. Like, I'd rather be, you know, go with Brian Hartline or Manny Diaz before someone like Clark Lee.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Brent Key here in a second, because I think it's, like, a similar idea of, like, Are they just QB merchants, right? Like, Brent Key has Haynes King, and now Clark Lee has Diego Pavia. And we'll save the Brent Key discussion for then. But, right, you mentioned Tim getting Jerry Kill from New Mexico State, getting Tim Beck, different from the Ohio State offense coordinator back in the day, Tim Beck. But getting Tim Beck, who was the offense coordinator in New Mexico State, he comes to Vanderbilt, they bring in Diego Pavia too. So it's not as simple as just, like, okay, well, he brought in a New Mexico State quarterback and then turned him into, you know, a potential Heisman Trophy winner. Shouldn't that be a good thing? When it's okay, well, he also brought in his head coach, and he also brought in his offense coordinator. So it's like, how much credit should Clark Lee get for that? And I know that that's like, it's a weird way to phrase things when it's like, are we really going to dock a guy for bringing in a good quarterback, for bringing in a good player at the best position? Like, okay, that should be like generally a good thing, but I don't know. I look at Clark Lee, 2-10 his first year, 5-7 his second year, and 2-10 his third year at Vanderbilt, with both of those 2-10 seasons being winless, 0-8 in an SEC play. I understand Vanderbilt is a tough place to coach. You know, James Franklin was at Vanderbilt, very aware of like the struggles that Vanderbilt has, and especially in the SEC. But I just don't see anything like extraordinary about Clark Lee. And even like recruiting wise, like I've been looking at all these coaches and how they've recruited, And Clark Lee has recruited well at Vanderbilt, right? They're like three of their best recruiting classes in like the last like decade, basically since Franklin has left, has come with Clark Lee at the helm these last, you know, 3 or 4 years. Still the worst classes in the SEC. Like every, like even the best Vanderbilt class is the worst class in the SEC. So, okay, like that's a duck at Vanderbilt for sure. But I just, one of the things that like I want from this next head coach is like a clear, understood philosophy of like what he is. That's why I'm so in favor of Jeff Brohm. Like I know Jeff Brohm's going to have a good offense. I know Jeff Brohm is going to, you know, get the most out of his quarterbacks. I'm not greatly concerned about recruiting no matter what, because I think that Penn State is basically going to recruit at a top 15-ish level, give or take, no matter what. And NIL is going to be such an important part of that, that if it's Clark Lee or whether it's Manny Diaz or Brian Hartline or whoever, right, like Penn State, the bottom is not going to fall out on Penn State's recruiting. I think Penn State will be fine recruiting-wise. But I just don't know, like, what is it about Clark Lee that is, you know, so fantastic that it's, okay, let's pay him, you know, $10 million to be the coach of the program. Because – man, I'm not the biggest fan of Manny Diaz. Like I almost feel like I'm taking crazy pills the way that some Penn State fans talk about Manny Diaz. You would think that he was, you know, Buddy Ryan incarnate. But even I would rather, like, I think I'd rather have Manny Diaz than Clark Lee. I just don't see it. And I'm curious to see how Clark Lee finishes, because they're 7-2. They have Auburn coming up, Kentucky and Tennessee. Those are three definite winnable games for Vandy. So they finished 7-2. Maybe I'm singing a different tune, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't completely get it with Clark Lee.
So. Clark Lee, I think, is just like that classic example of if he can win at this place, you know, if he can win 7, 8, 9 games at this place, then he can win a national title here. Well, you know, which so many fan bases, so many programs just have that mentality, and you know, it rarely works out that way.
I just also think that it's like, if you're that good of a coach, it should take, like, the sign should be there within those first 3 years. And okay, going 5-7 at Vandy, I guess, is solid, right? That's the best thing that he had in those first 3 years. Like, I think it would just be a little bit more obvious if he was that guy as a coach. You would see like the immediate, not even winning, a little bit more competitiveness that we just flat out didn't see from Vanderbilt. So not the biggest Clark Lee guy. It doesn't sound like you guys are either. What about Brent Key, who also, man, just everyone's a freaking alum of their schools, of the places that they're coaching now. Kenny Dillingham, Brent Key, Clark Lee, Jeff Brohm. I'm sure I'm forgetting some people. But
that's the strange thing about this coaching carousel this year, is not only that there's so many openings and so many high profile programs looking for a coach right now, but so many of the up and coming coaches that, you know, would be the natural fits in this coaching cycle are coaching their alma maters. So that kind of adds another layer of complexity to your point too. It's what's making the search so wide open for so many programs this year.
Yeah, and just even to toss in, like, the, you know, you see what Indiana has done with Kurt Cignetti, and I think it shows that a lot of these coaches of, like, if you can get that buy-in from the university the way that Indiana has bought in, that you don't need to be at a Auburn or Florida or LSU or Penn State or any of these blue blood or whatever you want to call them programs. So that just complicates matters, too, of not only these guys being alums, but knowing that it's more open in this day and age of potentially getting that school to the next level.
Brent Key, though. I do have a lot of I have some thoughts on Brent Key, because I actually do watch quite a bit of Georgia Tech football. They're a pretty entertaining team to watch under Key. They have a very aggressive defense where they're just kind of, you know, 11 guys playing with their hair on fire. So it's just, they're just a fun college team to watch. They've got a really good running game where they just kind of find unique ways to get guys in space and keep defenses on their toes, just find mismatches against the defense. But the thing that really confuses me about Brent Key as a coach is, I don't know how many times I've watched them play a ranked Clemson or Florida State or, you know, one of the big dogs in the ACC that year, and they bring them down when, you know, there's clearly a talent differential and, you know, they're overachieving and they beat these really good teams, but then the next week they'll drop one to Wake Forest or Syracuse or whoever's at the bottom.
NC State.
That year. Yeah, that's a perfect example. So this year, you know, they and Clemson turned out not to be that good, but they upset them early in the season. And I don't know if it's the next week or a couple weeks later, they really dodged a bullet and got a couple lucky calls just to get past Wake Forest and I believe overtime. And then to your point, they just lost to NC State, who was not having a good season even for NC State standards. You know, they lost to them by multiple scores. So there's a lot of inconsistency with that team, and I don't know what exactly is going on with the program, but it usually does start with coaching when teams look vastly different from week to week.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like Key more than Clark Lee. And I haven't watched as much as Jared has, but I was watching today, like Zach Seiko, and he had, I think, the Locked On recruiting guy, Brian Smith, who's, I think he lives down south, but he's very familiar with SEC territory. But he was talking about how Brent Key, he was Alabama's offensive line coach under Nick Saban for several years in the 2010s. And, you know, with Brent Key, you're going to get tremendous play in the trenches on both sides of the ball, which very enticing to me because, you know, we need it all. It all starts up front on both sides. And plus, you know, they bring that. I think what it really is with Key is he brings an identity. You know, we're going to be tough up front, be physical. We're going to, you know, I guess it's not quite Smash Mouth, Jared, but it's
new age. New age Smash Mouth, right?
Still new age Smash Mouth. So, yeah, which, you know what? I think a lot of old school Penn State fans would love the sound of that. So, you know, if he's rising up on the board, you know, I'd still say Jeff Brom's my preferred realistic candidate. But, you know, Brent Key, I'm warming up to it.
Yeah. Sign me up. You mentioned, right, identity. I was talking about, like, philosophy with Clark Lee. And that is, like, kind of where I differ on Brent Key compared to Clark Lee, even though, right, both of them, I think there's questions of what are they without their quarterbacks, which, again, I think that there's a little bit difference of Brent Key bringing in Haynes King after he, you know, was injured at Texas A&M, showed that Texas A&M was essentially benched at A&M and kind of rebuilt him at Georgia Tech to be this, I mean, Tim Tebow light type, you know, quarterback where he's, you know, running the ball 20 times a game and doing everything. And yeah, I don't know if that's like a winning recipe for a team that actually wants to win a national title, though we'll say like Notre Dame and Riley Leonard, like it wasn't too far off last year as far as like what they were asking him to do. But Tim, you mentioned the identity and the philosophy, and that is like the differentiating factor for me with Key compared to Lee, really compared to so many of these other coaches. It's like that offensive line background and the toughness and the grit and the power. Like one of like the things with, I mentioned Jeff Brom, like the quarterback play, the thing with Brian Hartline, like it's at least the idea of like, okay, at the very least, like we know that we're going to be able to recruit wide receivers. Wide receiver play will probably be strong. Like, you want something of substance there, something that Penn State can hang their hat on and say like that's what we do well offensively. I think it's always been there for Penn State defensively, and yeah, having an offensive line coach at your head coach certainly, I don't say guarantees that you have a good offensive line, but there's going to be that emphasis there. So yeah, I'm pretty big fan of Brent Key. I want to do a little bit more research as far as what his potential staff could be. I think that'll be a big piece to it. I do think like it's funny, like I was reading up on him and he's originally from, I believe, Birmingham, Alabama, you know, Southern guy, talks about like hunting, fishing, like all that different stuff. Like I actually think he'd fit.
People hunt and fish in Central PA, you know, he'd be right.
He apparently loves grilling like steaks and stuff like that. Like, hey, we have plenty of cows, Brent. Don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. But right. The idea of like, you know, there's a difference to recruiting in the South versus recruiting in the Northeast when you're going to Philly and Baltimore and New York City and stuff like that. But a lot of that can be staff related, right? Who he hires and things like that. But I think that if he's, you know, open as a Southerner to move to PA, I think it could be a really good fit. And right, just a guy that wins games that he's not supposed to. I know, Gemmer, I think Jared, you were the one who said it, just you know, he loses some stinkers to NC State or to Wake Forest or to whoever, but does get Georgia Tech to play, you know, really, really well in big games. I think they're 7-1 against ranked ACC teams. The reason that we say ACC teams is because they do play Georgia at the end of every year, and they always lose to Georgia. But even last year, I mean, they nearly
overtimes.
Yeah, nearly knocked Georgia off. So once again, I think he's a guy that would recruit, you know, pretty well overall. Again, I'm not greatly concerned with like recruiting, just with the way that football is set up nowadays with NIL and really just how much your staff is involved in that type of stuff. But man, I also like the idea of like our coach being able to beat up other coaches. Like, I think that's cool as well. Like, okay, Ryan Day, like meet me in the octagon, right? Like, let's see what's up. But no, he checks a lot of the boxes for me, and just even like just listening in interviews and trying to get like that idea of like the culture that he would set and stuff like that. It all sounds really, really good to me. So count me in on the Brent Key train.
Just to add, Pat, you know, you mentioned how, you know, maybe culturally at least, you know, Brent Key might be a fish out of water being a lifelong Southerner, but just a reminder, the most legendary coach in Penn State football history was a Brooklyn, New York native.
Sure.
I mean, culturally, Brooklyn and State College could not be any more different from each other. So,
and Center County is certainly, you know, I think it was at the Mizzou SB Nation site. I don't know if we discussed this on here, but the Mizzou SB Nation site, where about Eli Drinkwitz, like, would he fit at Florida? Would he fit at Penn State? Like, where are the chances that he takes the job? And he did mention that he thought that Penn State would be the more likely option for Drinkwitz. But he, one of the comments was how Drinkwitz would fit in with the wine and cheese crowd of Penn State, which I don't know if Southerners are like quite familiar with what exactly Pennsylvania is. Cause okay, Penn State is made up of Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, New York, and Baltimore and DC fans, which definitely not wine and cheese. But you, beyond that, Center County and State College, like it's not.
It's a very meat and potatoes. I'm from State College, so I mean, I'll tell you, it's. I mean, yeah, it's a little more, I guess. How do I put it? A little more diverse compared to other parts of Central PA, like in terms of food options. Yeah, you got a lot more to choose from, but I think at its heart, though, it's, you know, it's like a meat and potatoes type.
And very country. If Brent Key or Eli Drinkwitz or any of these Sounders want to go fishing, they will have no shortage of options. If they want to go hunting, they have no shortage of options. So
one of the best places to go fly fishing in the U.S. So
yeah. So no, I would like a guy that is a little bit more offensively. Like, again, I like the idea of let's have a really good quarterback that can pass the ball, stretch the field vertically, get some athletic wide receivers in. But I do think that there is something to like, what is Penn State actually going to be? Because for so long with James Franklin, it was like modeling ourselves after Ohio State when, all right, maybe the best idea is not just to try to model yourself after Ohio State. Maybe you lean into what Penn State is.
You shouldn't try to mimic Ohio State. I mean, yeah, you're never going to be like Ohio State. You got to, like Michigan did this. They didn't try to be Ohio State. They, you know, they did like the opposite almost, you know, just.
Yeah, power run game.
Of course, you know, there's a little bit of, it's a little cheating on the side, but. That aside, you know, identity-wise, they were like the polar opposite of Ohio State. So you got to do your own thing if you're going to beat Ohio State. You don't try to mimic them, which is what Franklin did. Just real quick before we move on, couple, you know, a little extra coach search talk here. Pierre Morris asked, what about Alex Golish or John Summerall? Golish being the South Florida head coach and Summerall, I believe, is Tulane's coach. Yeah.
I think Summerall is probably going to get the Auburn job, would be my guess. Once again, another guy that's a Sounder.
I've only seen him rumored for SEC jobs like LSU or Auburn or Florida.
He's originally from – I know he played at Kentucky, and now I'm getting people mixed up. But he played at Kentucky. He's a Sounder through and through. I think, again, like just talk about like cultural fits, and I know I was just saying that, you know, parts of PA can basically be the South, but he seems a little bit more Southerner to me than even Brent Key. So I get the feeling that he probably gets the Auburn job. I wouldn't be totally opposed to Summerall, but I'll be honest, I don't know too much about him outside of You know, he's done a fine job at Tulane. He also took over a pretty good spot from what Willie Fritz was doing at Tulane too. So, as far as Golesh, I really, really do like Golesh. Going back to like the fun, exciting offenses, and he did a great job when he was at Tennessee under Josh Heupel and working with Hendon Hooker and kind of turning that, you know, whole program around with their offense. I do worry that it's a little bit too gimmicky. Like it's one thing when you're up, you know, 31-17 with 8 minutes to go in the third quarter and you've been dominating through the air. But are you able to flip that switch and drain? I'm not talking like, okay, PJ Fleck, like run the ball, punt. But none of that style of offense, like the full on like air raid, wide split, stuff like that, we haven't really seen that have success at the highest levels. Like it kind of seems like you're tapped out. It's like a
Wisconsin tried it with disastrous results.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be, if they hired Golesh, I think we'd do a pretty good job. Ohio guy as well, actually born in Russia, which is pretty interesting. Soviet Union. So
then he grew, I think he, I'm reading his Wikipedia biography, but he moved to
Ohio then. Yeah. But
yeah. And then he grew, I guess his formative years were in, Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. So went to Ohio State, was a GA there, or student assistant to start out. So he at least knows the Big Ten footprint somewhat.
Do you guys have any thoughts on them?
I think they're both good coaches and done a fine job. I guess I just don't picture either one of them, you know, as Big Ten candidates. Not that they don't deserve to be. I just, you know, kind of assume that they're kind of the guys who are going to be looking at the Auburns, the Arkansas, like, so, you know, some of those openings.
Missouri, perhaps?
Missouri.
I think Golesh would be confident in Missouri.
Yeah, so I could see that. I'm not necessarily opposed to either one of them. I guess I haven't really considered them, either of them, as strong candidates at this point.
Yeah, I don't get the vibe that Kraft is going to go reach for a G5 head coach at this point. I haven't read or heard any subtle hints that he's even contacted Alex Golesh, or, you know, maybe Golesh's agent reached out to them, but doesn't sound like there's anything there. So I don't see it happening.
For the record, like, I understand, like, right, there's been a lot of talking, like, with Bob Chesney at James Madison, who seems like a good coach as well. I know some Penn State fans like him. We talked in previous weeks about like this idea of it's not that important to previously be a head coach when you look at who all these current head coaches of the best programs are. I think the same can be said of like Group of Five. Like Golesh might be a top five head coach in the sport. John Summer might be a top five head coach in the sport. I understand why Kraft isn't necessarily going to like prioritize them right away, but that is like one of the things that, again, according to like these reports of like Elko, DeBoer, and Marcus Freeman, and for as much as they're casting a wide net, I do hope, and I think that we'll see this over in the coming weeks, of like, I think interviews and talking to these coaches are going to be really, really important, just like it is in like any job search. Like, okay, Brian Hartline might only be ninth on Pat Kraft's board right now, but once he gets in interviews, maybe that completely changes. Same thing with Alex Golesh or Bob Chesney. Like, I just hope that Pat Kraft does have that open mind and it doesn't take someone off the board just simply because of like the school that they're at, just because they're at South Florida, just because they're at James Madison. Because that's how you that's eliminating people just because of that type of stuff is I just think a little bit silly, because again, you look at these top 25 jobs or you look at the top 15 or top 10 or whatever it might be, and you know, guys from all different backgrounds. So it's about finding like the needle in the haystack of sorts, and that needle can be coming from anywhere. So final coaching search thoughts, or should we move on to picks for Saturday's games?
Patience. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're still a few weeks from hearing anything concrete, I'm convinced. So there's gonna be a lot of twists and turns ahead, and we'll see where we land. But I think for now we just need to be patient.
And I think have some faith too, you know, I know there's people that have some concerns because, you know, maybe the basketball hire he made wasn't the best, but you know, as we said before, apples and oranges, you know, this is Penn State football, not Penn State basketball. And plus, Kraft was fairly new to the job back then, and I don't think he understood how dire the NIL situation was for hoops. And, you know, he seems to know what he's looking for, and he knows what he wants the school's identity to be when it comes to aggressiveness of NIL and utilizing the transfer portals. So, you know, I trust he'll find what he's looking for.
Yeah, and it's not likely that whoever ends up getting the job is going to be seen as a slam dunk hire. I just don't think there's a whole lot of those candidates out there. So I think
it can be a solid hire. Like,
yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. But I think whoever comes in, you know, we're just going to have to go in with an open mind, and there's going to be pros and cons about their resume and, you know, what our thoughts are about them. But I just think ultimately we're just going to have to go in with an open mind and give them a chance and see what they can do.
Yeah, it's not about winning the press conference, because right, even if they get Mike Elko, like, just because you hire Mike Elko doesn't mean that he comes in and automatically like wins the national title. Like, there's going to be such small things that will happen throughout the 10 years of whoever that they hire that will make or break it. So yeah, obviously it'd be fun if they hire someone that excites the fan base and gets up at the press conference and fires everyone up, but I'm not greatly interested in winning the press conference. And I know we talked about this before. I just want to say again, like, I think a very, very important thing is that, like, yes, Penn State wants to hire someone that's better than James Franklin because they want to compete for national titles. The firing of James Franklin was not just about what James Franklin has done. It's about what is coming down the pike and projecting. And clearly there was a disconnect from recruiting, from NIL, from how the roster is fit. Again, like, just James's lack of, like, yes, he's a great CEO, like the CEO head coach, but like, how many offense coordinators do we have to go through? Like, this was, he got Kirk Soraka, fired him, got his guy Mike Yurchich, we went all along, they fired him, went and got Andy Kolonicki, probably would have ended up firing him at the end of the season. So at some point it was just time to cut bait, and that's where we're at. So I think it's important for people to stop comparing whoever the next coach is to say, oh, they haven't won 11 games, they have done this, they haven't done that, they haven't had the resources that James has had. So we'll see what happens with all that. But yeah, I would preach patience as well. And just like generally an open mind. Just generally an open mind. And certainly do not expect Kalen DeBoer and Mike Elko, because if that is your expectation, I have bad news for you. Really, really bad news for you. But anyway, going on to our games this week. Tim, you are clearly in the lead. You are 11-10. Jarrett, you and I had a rough Saturday. Jarrett, you're 7-14, and I am 7-15. So, Tim, we're going to start with you. BYU goes to Texas Tech for a big, Big 12 showdown. Texas Tech is the 10.5-point favorite in this one. What are you thinking, Tim?
That's a lot of points to put on for one team. It looks like a pretty evenly matched game. These are two teams that are both currently in the projected college football playoff bracket out of the Big 12. I think it should be a good back and forth affair. I mean, I think Tech wins it, but I'm going to take BYU to cover.
All right, I'm going to take Texas Tech because I'm fading Tim. Jared.
I'm going Texas Tech too. I do think that they've been the class of the Big 12. I'll give them a mulligan for the loss to Arizona State. They lost their quarterback that game. So, you know, I'll give them a break for that one bad performance because they look pretty dominant otherwise. So I'll take them and give the points on at home. So yeah, give me the Red Raiders.
By the way, you mentioned Arizona State. I do want to say, like, out of all these, like, guys that are alums at their schools, it certainly does seem like Kenny Dillingham is the most serious about fully staying there, because you don't hear him. I mean, he gets tossed on, like, a hot board when Florida or LSU or Penn State or whoever opens up, but there legitimately is, like, no smoke about Kenny Dillingham leaving. So credit to that guy. He is.
Well, plus the Arizona State's kind of, I mean, they've taken a hit with losing their starting quarterback, and I think.
Yeah.
You know,
they've battled injuries for a lot this year, even their wide receiver Jordan Tyson, I know, has been in and out of games, but just want to give him a shout out. I like him fully sticking with the Sun Devils, his alma mater as well. We go to the Big Ten, where Oregon travels east to Iowa. This is not a primetime kick at Kinnick, but it is a 3:30 kick. Jared, we'll start with you for this one. Iowa is the home dog.
I'm really tempted to take Oregon, but I think I have to just have to take Iowa and the points if you're going to give me 6.5. Of course, which means or they probably will keep it close and Oregon wins by a touchdown. But I just see Iowa kind of, you know, dragging them into the muck and mud a little bit. And, you know, Oregon's kind of pulling out a not super low scoring game, but some game with like a weird score, like 27-22 or something along those lines. So, give me Iowa in the points. And since they're at home and I just feel like they're going to be able to give Oregon a game.
I think this could resemble something similar to what we saw when Oregon played at Wisconsin last year. Wisconsin really dragged them into the mud. They led 10-6 at halftime. Oregon ultimately won 16-13. I think it's going to be something similar on Saturday. I think the Ducks win, but I'm going to take the Hawkeyes to cover.
All right, and I will take Oregon because I'm fading Tim, just hoping that he gets these wrong and I can make a comeback and win this because that's my main concern. I'm not concerned about – I'm 6-15, guys. Don't listen to my picks at this point. It's all about just trying to catch Tim. I actually do think I like Oregon in that game. Oregon might not actually be good is my concern, considering that their best win is maybe, you know, double overtime Penn State, which is a slightly different team back then, I think, but – clearly not as good as we all thought, but I don't know. It seems like too many people are in on Iowa, in my humble opinion. But we go to the SEC, which is a Mike Elko versus Eli Drinkwitz. It's very important. Maybe Pat Kraft will be at this game. I love the idea of Pat Kraft being at this game to watch. Two candidates just duke it out. We have Texas A&M at Missouri. Mizzou is the 6.5-point home dog. They will be without Burrow Pabula, but they will be starting fellow PA native Matt Zollers, who I thought looked pretty good, all things considered, when he came in against Vanderbilt 2 weekends ago. What are we thinking here, Jarrett?
I'm going A&M. I mean, I've just been really impressed with them all season. The thing that really impressed me about them is that it seems like they find a way to win about every week, just doing something different. You know, they'll win the shootout. They'll win by just, you know, pounding the ball over and over on the ground. I mean, they're just... You know, they just seems like they just kind of so there's something new every week. So they kind of have the talent and they know how to use it. So, you know, considering they got a pretty feisty defensive line, and it'll be Zoller's one of his first start, even though he did look really impressive for a true freshman come to the bench when I saw him a couple weeks back. But yeah, give me A&M. I think they even on the road, I think they're going to win by at least a touchdown.
I'm with Jared. Give me A&M. I mean, you know, Mike Elko's got that train roaring down the tracks in College Station. So.
I have to go with Mizzou. Give me Mizzou. I fully believe in Matt Zoller. Spring forward, great. Really excited for the Zollers era at Penn State as well. So have to root for that too. So give me Mizzou. All right. Any final thoughts? Indiana coaching search, Penn State basketball, big win over Fairfield.
I mean, you know, they needed a late run to avoid an embarrassing season opening loss. And, you know, giving up 12 offensive rebounds of Fairfield is not a good sign for Big Ten play. But a lot of new faces on the team. Definitely some great talent there. And I think you know, I'd be surprised if they finish, you know, somewhere above the bottom three of the conference. But, you know, I think it's a team that could hopefully just improve as the season goes along, pull off a few upsets in conference play. And, you know, unlike last year's team, they won't quit in mid-January. You know, so there'll actually be a bunch of kids you can actually be proud of, regardless of the final win-loss record.
I can co-sign. I'll be honest. I didn't watch a second of the Fairfield game, but we love Europe. We love Europe. We're all about Europe this year. So going to need the Europeans to step up.
And I'll end on an optimistic note and just remind people that just about every week, something incredibly improbable happens in college football. So, hey, why not us? Let's just throw all the logic out the window and maybe we're here Saturday celebrating a victory that nobody would have seen coming.
Why not us? Why not? Perfect sign off.
Little Pat Chambers reference there. I like it.
So. I just have to say, Pat Chambers, the ghost of Pat Chambers, still lives at Penn State. Why not us? Maybe Terry Smith will just be on the sidelines with a whiteboard. Just why not us?
Why not us?
Just taking a timeout, just letting the team know, why not us? All right, we'll be back on Saturday after the game. I believe Jared will not be, right, Jared, you're not joining us? All right, so it'll just be me and Tim joining you after the game. We'll be live, 5 to 10 minutes after it ends, so thinking the 3 o'clock area to discuss. But is either going to be, a massive win or another ho-hum loss. So I'll make a promise. If Penn State wins, I will do it shirtless. I know I retired the shirtless podcast, but Penn State gets a win, I will come on here shirtless. So
there's always an occasion where the shirtless podcast has to happen. So that would be one of them.
Can I say, just real quick before we end, I don't know if you guys have seen the student sections have been doing the,
taking off their shirts, yes, and waving the,
that every is week. Yeah, people are saying it goes back to Indiana in 2021. I did that 2017, Michigan State. I vividly remember tweeting from BSD, "All right, fellas, shirts off," going into the fourth quarter. Of course, we lost, so didn't really catch on. But that's me. I'm the shirts off. I'm the tarps off guy. I deserve the credit. So just when you see all these student sections with their shirts off, just remember. And I'll start with this guy right here. But all right, we will see you Saturday after the game. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you then.